Afternoon that all of the universe can be reduced to one integral. I can't quite do that, but the most horrifying part was when somebody showed a CMB map and cut out the radio galaxies. That was like getting hit with a cue ball in the head. So I'm going to talk about feedback and try to show some surprises. I'm going to start out with a review of stuff you may not have seen. It's old stuff we did years ago, but that's a segue into the newer stuff that we're doing now. The basic question we want to ask here, it's much related to the one that Michael mentioned a few minutes ago, is why are these galaxies dead today when they should be burgeoning? Long ago, it was thought that it was just gravity and angular momentum that made these galaxies look the way they do. And what we've learned in the last 20 years is that, in fact, supermassive black holes play an enormous role in quenching galaxies and turning them red and dead. We heard feedback discussed by Michael. For the low-mass galaxies, it's thought that winds dominate the feedback process. And in massive galaxies, it's thought that there are two types. One is the quasar mode, which is thought to operate early on in the universe and perhaps gave us the M-sigma relation, which is the relationship between black hole mass and galaxies. It's a simple thing. It basically says that for every atom that falls into a black hole, 1,000 atoms form stars, and that's been imprinted on galaxies today. How that works isn't understood. And then there's the second feedback mode, which is known as the radiomechanical mode. And here it's thought that this is what stabilizes hot atmospheres that surround all galaxies. And they some people refer to it as a maintenance mode. One of the surprises we've learned from stuff we've done that I'll show you here and also work by my graduate student Pratamesh Tamhane is that these actually radio galaxies are extraordinarily efficient at lifting gas, blowing it out of the galaxy, much more so than perhaps quasars. And that's a bit of a surprise, but they're you know, lift the largest masses and they lift them to much higher altitudes than quasars, for example, are capable of doing. So how did this all start? This is old stuff, but I'll just remind you for the younger people who may not have been born when a lot of this stuff was done. These are pictures of hot atmospheres in galaxy clusters. There are similar ones, you know, in just normal ellipticals. And whereas back in the old days before we had high resolution X-ray imagers, these things would look smooth. The atmospheres were smooth and hydrostatic equilibrium. But you can see there are these enormous holes in these galaxies. And these holes, it turns out, are filled with radio emission. And you can also see that there are little features here, ripples that are shock waves and so on. The upshot, and they can be, you know, sort of, you know, galaxy-sized things to things that are, you know, holes that are over 600 kiloparsecs long. Okay, so there are, well, 400 kiloparsecs long, rather. And it turns out that just by using the simple laws of thermodynamics, we, for the first time, were able to show how much power is coming out. With a quasar, you measure the instantaneous power, but you don't know what its history is. Here, we get the total energy that emerges from the black hole, and we get its evolution over a period of several hundred million years. And it turns out for this guy here, this is roughly 10 to the 62 ergs of energy pumping out. What that means is in a period of about 10 to the 8th years, it swallowed a few 10 to the 8th solar masses of molecular gas, which is extraordinary. It means essentially all of the molecular gas, or nearly all of it, in this galaxy would have had to stop, look at the black hole, and make a beeline in to feed it. Okay, so it's an enormous amount of energy. We don't know how it got there, but this has led to a problem that we've been working on for several years, which, what drives feedback? Okay, and it's an important question because what's shown here is jet power, which is just the PV work done divided by the time scale over which it was done, shown on, you know, from images like I just showed, versus the rate at which you'd have to input heat to prevent these atmospheres from cooling. In the central regions of the atmospheres of ellipticals and clusters, the cooling time is very short, less than 10 to the 8th years. So these galaxies should be burgeoning. No bright galaxy today should be red and dead, but they are. And what we found, interestingly, is that the jets turn on in a way that they know about the hot atmosphere on vastly larger scales. So this is stuff happening down on the scale of an event horizon that knows about volumes that are decades and decades larger. So it's remarkable. Big things have very powerful jets. Little things have less powerful jets. And nature seems to know how to regulate this. It's a finely tuned balance and we don't quite know how that works. It's also true for mass. Feedback knows about the mass of the halo. I think Michael mentioned that earlier in his talk. This shows halo mass here versus feedback power. We see a trend that is consistent with what you'd expect from the M-sigma relationship. So it knows about the atmosphere, it knows about the mass. So that's stuff happening on a very small time, a very small size scale, knows about an enormous volume around it. So how does that work and how is feedback sustained? So this is an image, again, of the Perseus cluster of galaxies. You can see this hot atmosphere in X-rays. And when you go to the visual, this is the central galaxy, NGC 1275 in the center. And you can see there's all this activity. So there, the balance isn't too finely tuned. In order to keep a feedback loop going, you need to feed it. And what this shows here is H-alpha emission, which is the skins of the ionized skins of molecular gas. And there's star formation down in the center. So this galaxy is growing roughly as you would expect from M-sigma. And so that led to the question, you know, what's going on with the molecular gas? How does this gas go thermally unstable and fuel the black hole? And here are some clues on the left-hand side. This is work done by a former graduate student of mine, Farrell Polito. This is molecular gas mass in these systems versus the gas of the in the hot atmosphere within about 10 kiloparsecs. These systems, in the most massive systems, they're burgeoning, okay? These are enormous molecular gas masses. Remember, the Milky Way has a molecular gas mass of about 10 to the 9. These are giant ellipticals that have 10 to the, you know, gas masses approaching 10 to the 11 solar masses. And to further connect that to the cooling in the hot atmosphere, what you see here is the cooling time of the hot atmosphere versus the molecular gas mass. And what you can see is when the cooling time is longer than about a gigayear, these things are quiescent. And then when it crosses a gigayear, they light up like a Christmas tree. You end up with star formation at rates, in some cases, that approach 500 solar masses per year. Typically, there are a few solar masses per year. And they have molecular gas masses that range well beyond what you'd see in a normal spiral galaxy, up to 10 to the 11 solar masses. Okay, so we want to understand why that is. And here's one of the strange things here. In classical thermal instability models, you'd expect to see this kind of behavior when the ratio of the free fall time to the cooling time is of order unity. Okay? And so, you know, given we have these marvelous X-ray observations, we can measure the cooling times in these systems and the free fall times using techniques that we've developed, just assuming hydrostatic equilibrium, you can use lensing or whatever you like. You can show here that the cooling time, when it's short, these things, everything in red is thermally unstable, okay? And so when the cooling time drops below about 10 to the 9 years at 10 kiloparsecs, they light up. When you look at it in T cool over T free fall, they're all above 10. So they should nominally be stable. These are relatively stable systems. So why is it that a system that should be nominally stable is clearly thermodynamically unstable? Well, we needed better observations. As Michael says, we're only so clever. So we go out and we observe them, and that's where the fun starts. We started a project quite a long time ago in cycle zero with ALMA to go out and look at these systems in molecular gas. And these are just three systems that are burgeoning here. All of these have star formation rates above a few solar masses per year. And these are the footprints of the instrument on the central galaxies, and we found things that we did not expect. Here's another example of a really burgeoning central galaxy, the Phoenix Cluster. It's got a star formation rate of 5 to 800 solar masses per year in this enormous blue region in the center of the cluster. This is the star formation in this galaxy. And when we go out and look with ALMA, this is what we found. Right here at the center, these are these large X-ray bubbles that I showed before. And you can see that at least half of the gas here, 10 to the 10 solar masses of molecular gases, seems to be drawn up along the backside of the cavities. We saw this earlier in other systems, and this created a bit of a problem because molecular gas has a density of 5 decades higher than the typical gas densities in this cluster. So trying to lift molecular gas with a jet or a bubble is pretty tough. It has a lot of inertia. And so it's like lifting a baseball with a hairdryer. Okay, it's pretty hard to do. So we were surprised, but as we went out and got more observations, we saw here's molecular gas. This is another object, Abel 1795. You can see the molecular gas lies along the edge of the radio jets. So clearly, these jets are able to either lift molecular gas, which seems very hard to do, but it also occurred to us, since we knew that these bubbles are very effective at lifting atmospheric gas, that perhaps what was going on is that it was lifting the atmospheric gas, and the atmospheric gas was driving it thermally unstable, creating the fuel that eventually fell back in, fueling the black hole and fueling star formation, sustaining feedback. This is the evidence for that. This shows, again, a slide that's been shown a couple of times today. MSS 0735, it's this enormous outburst. On the right-hand side, you see the X-ray emission in blue, the radio emission in red. Because these atmospheres are optically thin in the X-rays, we get a direct measurement of the metallicity of the gas. It's pretty easy, like falling off a log. And so, you know, in general in these systems, you know, where are metals created? Metals are created in galaxies. And we see a concentration of metals in the hot atmospheres toward the center. But what a student of mine, Cliff Kirkpatrick, many years ago found was that the metals created in the center are being dragged out behind the radio bubbles, and the masses can be enormous. Okay, in this case, it's well over 10 to the 10 solar masses, which is about the mass that you see in many of these systems in molecular gas. So this occurred to us that maybe what's happening, this issue of trying to reconcile thermal instability in these systems with the ratio of the cooling, well, with standard cooling instability theory, this could be the solution to that problem. You lift the gas to an altitude where the ratio of the cooling time to free fall time is roughly unity. This is a model that we proposed in 2016. So the classical criterion is the cooling time to the free fall time is less than one. And as I showed before, in general, the static value in the centers of these clusters exceeds 10. So the gas should be largely stable. But if you take an X-ray bubble and you lift this low entropy gas, it turns out that the cooling time of this gas is comparable to about the time scale it takes to lift the gas to altitude here, roughly 5, 10 to the 7 to 10 to the 8th years. So it's possible that it can cool on the way up. And as it rises, as you pull the stuff up here, the cooling time is staying roughly the same, but since you're pulling it out, the free fall time is increasing. And so, in effect, you can approximately reach this thermal instability criterion where T cool over T free fall is equal to 1. I would consider this a conjecture. We're still working on testing this. It may work in some and not in others. And in fact, there may be multiple ways that gas becomes thermally unstable. That's one of the jobs that we're looking at over the next several years. One other thing that I wanted to mention too, these systems, a couple of the puzzles that have come out of this work is, number one, the velocity structure of the molecular gas is surprisingly slow. Okay, what I expected we initiated this study many years ago was that we would tend to find gas in disks. Most of the molecular gas in the universe lies in disks, in galaxies. And when we go out, we find very few disks here. And in fact, most of this gas is traveling at speeds that are far below the free fall speeds. Remember, this is four to five orders of magnitude denser than the ambient atmosphere. This stuff should be falling like billiard balls. It's not. Somehow it seems to be coupled to the hot gas or is being slowed down in some way, or we just happen to be catching this stuff just as it's cooling out, which is very hard to understand because these things sit very nicely on the Schmidt-Kennicott relation. Another aspect of this that is very surprising is that this shows the entropy index here, which is just temperature over the density to the 2/3 power versus radius scaled to R2500. And what we found in clusters and ellipticals alike is they all have this very fine profile where the entropy scales is about R2/3 in these unstable regions. And it turns out that if you assume, or at least if these things are sitting in roughly isothermal spheres, the ratio of T cool to T cool free fall is constant in this regime where K goes to 2/3. And this is where we see gas becoming thermally unstable. One of the other surprising things here is this seems to hold reasonably well, despite the fact that these atmospheres have a huge range of mass and they're being assaulted by AGN, you know, jets coming out of the black hole that have a range in power over 5 decades. Yet somehow these things follow this law. So it turns out, you know, the standard predictions from most models, sort of following on what Michael said earlier, don't apply here as well. Most hydrodynamic models, or in fact, I'm unaware of any hydrodynamic model that accurately reproduces the structure, the thermodynamic structure of hot atmospheres, you know, following the assault of a radio jet. They seem to be there, despite the enormous power, 10 to the 62 ergs being dumped, for example, in a period of 10 to the 8th years, the atmosphere seems to respond almost instantly to that. It doesn't drive the temperature up and the density down. So that was a big surprise for us, and we've been
What is R2500?
I'm sorry, this is R25. That's the overdensity at that radius. So it corresponds to a radius of
trillions.
It's scaled to the overdensity of the universe at that redshift. So this in physical units, that would be about a few hundred kiloparsecs.
Okay.
And since I'm running out of time, I just want to finish up with the future. Again, I hope we got the sign error right on this, but Hitomi was launched a few years ago, and it also found something that struck me as very surprising. Despite being assaulted by this 10 to the 59 erg radio source at the center, radio jets launching off radio bubbles and shocks, the atmosphere is surprisingly quiescent. The velocities, like we see in molecular clouds, the turbulent velocities are, you know, sort of 130 to 140 kilometers a second, which is really narrow. So they're getting banged by these AGN, yet it's still very quiescent. And unfortunately, after we took this image, a sign error kicked in, and the telescope spun out of control, and we lost it. But we're now working on CRISM, which is its successor, and Waterloo is a PI institution for that. So you'll all have access to it. Thanks to work done by some graduate students here. I'm looking forward to those results in a few years. And with that, I'll just leave my summary and take questions. Thank you.